Hi, everybody. My name is Will. I'm a recovering addict. Amen. It's only through God's grace that I'm here. For that, I'm truly grateful. And I say that sincerely. My clean date's 11/13/91, just for today. If you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, welcome. If you're here and you don't know why you're here, you are blessed. And if you're here and you know why you're here, you are truly blessed. I'm going to give you a little thing about me, right? I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous a bum. A derelict, a person that used drugs by any means necessary. I was a functioning individual. I was in the military. I went to college. I was married, had a condo, a couple of houses. And once I got into drugs, my life went into a tailspin. And I knew I was going into a tailspin. I just didn't know how to stop. I'm talking about getting paid on a Friday, being broke on a Friday. I'm talking about knowing you need something to eat, but you'd rather get high. And the higher the euphoria took me, the lower the depression came. And then it took more and more of a high to get a more and more of a depression. So I was spending more money to get a depression. I was spending more money to feel normal when God in his divine wisdom already made me feel normal through birth. I'm one of those kids that was raised in an institution for kids. My mother abandoned me at the age of 2. So I learned my attitudes and behaviors at a very young age. The place was called Carter McCluskey School and Home, located in the city of White Plains. And I started getting resentments and attitudes and behaviors at a very young age because on the school bus, people were going home to houses, and I was going to an institution. An institution, right, where, like, it was either be dogged or you beat a dog. So you learn how to fight, like, real quick. And I didn't like getting picked on, so I learned how to rebel and fight very early in life. And that attitude and behavior carried on into school. I was one of those guys that went to wrestling team, played football, I ran track, and I liked that style of life, but I was always attracted to the dark side. And what I mean by the dark side, the nightlife, the cats on the corner with the newspapers under the arm, sharkskin pants, blahs, beavers, and always had that cool little nod, twitching of the nose, talk real slick. Still, we could hang out the mouth, always moving, never lit, never fell. And I liked that. So my lifestyle, I was informed by the misinformed that were misinformed. Okay? My first day of getting high was at the age of 13, smoked some marijuana out in the woods. Felt good. Took me outside of myself. Said, hey, this ain't bad. I like that feeling. And over a period of time, I went from marijuana to drinking some beer. Right, and the beer we had in them, they were no 40 ounces. We had 32s. There was a store down the hill. It was a discount store. We used to come back with cases and sit there and drink. See, I didn't like the way I felt. And the reason why I didn't like the way I felt, because number one, my mother abandoned me, right? So there's a feeling of abandonment. Number two is, I see you had a mother or father or both parents going to someplace, people grabbing you and loving you. I didn't have none of that. So I didn't feel nurtured at all, right? So I started having, like, resentments, like, why not me? Why me? Right? So my attitude was like, you know something? F y'all, I'm going to do me. And the way I was doing me, it was like, get on the football field, you was on the opposite team, I was trying to hurt you. I wasn't playing the fair game. My job was, I'm going to take you out of here. That was my attitude. You know, and that carried on into street life. Same thing. It was hard for me to make friends, and the people that knew me, knew where I came from, they nurtured me. I'm talking about their parents took me into the house and showed me what love is, what compassion is, what discipline is. I didn't learn that in an institution. So I went on through life. I went on to high school. And, like, being in an institution, right, when I was graduating, I didn't even want my high school ring. It was like, yo, we'll give you this money for this ring, right? I said, I don't want that. I want nothing to do with y'all. I want out of here. So I got out of there. I went on to college. In college, you graduate. My first year, I was doing great. Had a 3.5 GPA, studying hard, going to classes all the time, right? Party a little bit. Second year, partied all the time, studied none, went to classes a little bit. You know what happened, right? GPA dropped me like, yo, you got to go. So I joined the military. I went into the Marine Corps, went to boot camp. I did fine in boot camp, no problem. Yo, you can't go nowhere. You know, you got to do what they tell you to do. And if you run away, they laugh at you because you be in the swamps. And they say, don't worry, either the gator get them or we will. All right, so I stuck and stayed. Then I went on to my permanent duty station. And I was doing my job for a while. And then next thing you start meeting other people who are just like you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I mean? They may be from another town, another state, but they're just like you. You ain't got to say nothing. It's the movement, the look. Where's it at? Hey, flock, oh, what? And it was on. Started using. Started doing my dirt. And I'll never forget Charleston Naval Yard. Naval ship came in because they had some Marines out there, TAC fleet. Ship came in, ran into a brother. He had it. I wanted it. We sat in the NCO parking lot. We did it. We got busted. Right? I'm talking about seriously busted. My CO, commanding officer, gave me an option. His option was either you do 6 months of hard time and don't get paid, get an honorable, or you do 6 months hard time with pay and you get a dishonorable. And I wanted the honorable discharge. And I did what I had to do. But here again, the attitudes of behaviors, right, of like, I don't care. I'm going to do what I want to do. Even though they put me through a disciplinary thing, it didn't matter. Because my ability to accept responsibility at the moment was cool. But once my mindset set, I want to use, I'm going to use. It's that simple. Because we could be prayed over, counseled, judged, right? We could be, like, you know, beaten to death. And if you don't want to stop, you ain't going to stop. And I'm telling you from my own experience, right? So, like, I was like, ugh. I had to do what I had to do. I came out. Moved to Omaha, Nebraska. I was like a real big geographical mover, right? I moved from like New York, Omaha, Nebraska, San Antonio, Texas, Houston, Texas, Biloxi, Mississippi, Jacksonville, Florida, Alexandria, Virginia, Landover, Maryland, Washington, D.C., back to New York. And at the end of my using of that crazy running, I landed on 183rd and Raya, a bum, a derelict of a crack house. At first, I was Big Willie. At the end, I was begging for kibbles and bits. I was standing outside going tato, tato bien, right, with a leather jacket, cut off sweat shorts, deck sneakers, and it's snowing. That's the end of my run. 46th Precinct was down the street, three blocks. They knew me by name. They tried to save me a few times. First time was ROR to bullpen therapy. From bullpen therapy to send you away for 30 months, 60 months, so forth, so on. So I ran into this judge on the last rap, and he pulled out a sheet, and he saw my name, and he saw all the actions that I've been through. He pulled me in his chambers, and he said, Mr. Rosa, look out that window. This is Central Book on 161st Street in the Bronx. I go to the window, I look out. He said, do you see a tree out there? I said, no. He said, next time you come out of jail, there will be one. I shook, right? I went to Rikers, did my time, came back. My world shrunk down to 183rd and Ryan. I started going back. And somebody from my past, through divine intervention, that I feel was divine intervention, told me, you don't have to live like this no more. He said, there's a place you could go for emergency night stay. And when you get up in the morning, you can inquire about getting on social service. And for me, that was divine intervention because I didn't know what else to do. So I decided to take a suggestion. My mind was open to a new idea at that moment because I did not want to go back to the lifestyle that I was living. That lifestyle that I was living was through my own attitudes and through my own behaviors, right? So by going here, going to the shelter and getting into social service, they sent me up to a place to go through an assessment where they do a physical and mental evaluation, and then they assign you to a shelter. And at the shelter, they have meetings upstairs. And I was introduced to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And when I was introduced, I was one of the cats that sat in the back, arms folded, till you don't even touch me. You know, I was hard, right? The streets make you very, very hard. The streets of New York are mean. I mean, really mean. Right? And like, they're like, everybody's your friend when you got it, you Big Willie. But at the end, hit the road, Jack. And you get a resentment, you come back, you say, I ain't never coming back, but you come back anyway. So my thing was like my attitudes and behavior somehow through the drug addiction has manifested into something that I didn't want to be. It turned me into a person that I didn't want to be. And I seen it from the way I was living. From being in an institution to being in the service to being a married man, being responsible for a family, to neglecting that family, to becoming a bum in New York City streets, there was something wrong. And what was wrong was me. The drug is only 5% of the symptom. 95% is me. It's my attitudes, my behaviors, and how I carry it out. So the drug showed me something about myself that once I put it in me, I change into a beast. I don't love nobody but self. And then there's times I don't even love me. So what Narcotics Anonymous has introduced me to is one, to the God of my understanding. You cannot graft a new idea on a closed mind. My mind was like real open when I came up in here. I mean real open, because I was like beat up. I weighed 100 pounds soaking wet. My ribs was out of hock. My face was sucked in. My back pockets were touching. Everything I owned was on my back. Now if that ain't beat up, you tell me what is. So when I came in, like, I started eating. And they say the first thing to come back is the physical, right? Because we start eating. We start to look, work out, get a little muscle. Oh, now we're good, you know. We find some clothes, put on some clothes, look nice, put them on nice and tight, muscles bulging. Oh, now we think we're all that, right? The next thing to come back is the mental. The mental aspect is coming back because when you start eating right, your body starts to get its proper nutrition. And all the poison start to come out your system. Right, so all of a sudden now I think I'm intelligent, I'm bright. I got a college education, I've been in the service, I'm real bright. If I was so bright, why did this fly over my head? If you don't pick it up, you can't get out. So like one time I was in a meeting, I said something real slick, and this man walked to me and said, yo, young man, what you said is like real personal. I think you better get a sponsor. The next day, I asked that gentleman to be my sponsor, and I'm grateful for him because he gave me some discipline, right? Because he's like from the school of the old hard knocks, an OG, right? He was the type of guys like, yo, shut the hell up, sit up front. You don't know nothing about staying clean, nigga. Just shut up. Just sit down. Just sit. You think you all that, nigga? You ain't nothing, man. You a crackhead. Sit up front. Yeah, I get a resentment, but it was the truth. It was the truth. And what I started to learn over a period of time, man, like the obsession and compulsion within me, I don't know when, I don't know how, but it was lifted. I no longer thought that $20 gave me 3 jammies and a demo. Because that's what my mind, you gave me $20, my mind went automatically, 183rd and Ride, man, I'm going down there, I'm going to cop 3 jammies, I'm going to get this demo, right, get me a little pint of beer, I'm going up to this crack house to do my thing. That was my thinking. That's with some clean time. I could not hold on to money. So I have learned how to put money to the side and leave it on the side. Now, let me tell you about my early relapse, right? My real clean date was around June. I think it was May or June of that year. I was caddying at a golf course. And I believe I caddied for the Islands or Rangers, one of those hockey teams. Came up with a large sum of money. My great thinking told me, get this money, get the money from the shelter, put it together, go downtown, get this package. We're going to flip this package, right? And we're going to get out the shelter. My great thinking. We got the money. We got on the bus, went downtown, got the package, right? My attitudes, my behaviors, right? A monkey cannot sell bananas. Right? A monkey in a suit is still a monkey. Right? So I went down there, got this bag, right? 500 cracks in it, right? I had to sample it. Had to sample it. It's a wrap. It's a wrap. I'm going to tell you, it was a November night. It was about 20-something degrees. I'm standing outside 3 o'clock in the morning, sweating like I just came out of a shower. I admitted defeat. I'm talking about a paranoia, schizophrenia that hit me so hard that it scared me to the bone because I had never been there before. I'm talking about scared to move, thinking something's under the bed, between the mattresses, behind the shower, under the sink, won't go past the window because think somebody's going to shoot me. I stuck to the peephole. Shh, they're coming. Yeah. 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 What I have learned through that experience, right, I could not tell fantasy from reality. What I learned from that experience, that was my spirit telling me what you're doing is wrong. That's why you're so paranoid. That's why you're so scared. My spirit was telling me what I was doing was not correct, and yet you are killing yourself and you don't even know it. My attitudes and my behaviors. After that run, I got on an iron horse, went back north, asked for help. From that help, they sent me to a detox. From the detox, they sent me to a rehab where I learned I had a disease of addiction, a pathological obsession of an object or event. Pathological meaning abnormal, meaning I would take an object and take it to the extreme. I would take an event and take it to the extreme. Let's say like this, right? You're new in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You wake up from the waist down. You're going to take it to the extreme. If you start working out, you're going to take it to the extreme. You get a good paying job, get credit cards, you take it to the extreme. You go to the gym, pump iron, you take it to the extreme. Don't know how to moderate. My attitudes, my behaviors. I'm telling you my experience. Then I started getting a name in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous in my early recovery. He's a hoe. He likes to work out. He's a workaholic. And everything I looked at, it was a negative connotation. So here again, my attitudes and my behaviors, F you, I'm going to do me. Then certain situations started happening in life. There's this thing called a conscience. The thing called a conscience where you start to care about how people look at you and how you look at other people. And the only reason that started to happen because I started doing some step work. Because in the beginning, being abstinent, yeah, that was cool. But over a period of time, abstinent is not good enough. It is not good enough. Because you still is crazy. You just ain't using. You're here eating up space. It's about doing some work. And my sponsor made me do some work. He made me get into that first step. Talk about I'm powerless over my addiction. And he let me know addiction could be anything. It's not a drug anymore. Because you ain't using a drug. It's not even a drug. It's you. We talk about you got an issue, and I got an issue, and I'm dealing with this issue. I can't get past this issue. Nigga, ain't no issue. It's you. If you don't like the way you feel, stop doing the shit that make you feel that way. And I started getting with that program because I was doing some things in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous that were making me feel like real uneasy. I'm talking about my first 3 years, man. I went to a meeting. Four women that I was dealing with were sitting in the same room. My sponsor asked me, why are you sweating? And I told him what happened. He said, put an H on your chest and handle that. And they came out and gave me a whooping and talked about me like a dog. And I learned from that experience because I got embarrassed. I would not raise my hand. And what happened, I deserved. And I learned that you cannot play with another human being's emotions. Because sometimes, man, you can make another person go out. This is a program about love, not hurt. You know, we talk about don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired, right? But what goes with that is honesty, acceptance, love, and tolerance. All right, we're talking about you got to accept the person for where they're at because the circle and our symbol is room for all types of manifestation, right? Meaning there's no one perfect addict up in here. You got to allow a person, their process, be their process. And you got to be man or woman enough to pull your friend's coat, let them know you being a friend, and tell them what they're doing is wrong. And yeah, they may be like, angry or resentful, but the bottom line, the truth hurts. And through that hurt, there's growth. Yeah. I'm telling you my process, my attitudes, my behaviors, right? So what has happened, man, like doing the work, the things that I was doing that making me feel very uncomfortable, I had to stop doing. And yes, in the beginning, it was hard. It's just like stopping using drugs. In the beginning, it was hard. But once you stop and you stay in the process, it's so much easier. I'm a firm believer if you stay in this process and you practice these principles in your affairs, the things that used to drive you around going nuts and nuts and nuts, and you say it's an issue, you face it, you address it, it won't be an issue no more. You let some loving, caring people in your life help you in these situations through their experience and guide you, an issue will not be an issue no more. That's my experience. Today I know how to love another human being because I love me. I know how to be a friend to another human being because I know how to be a friend to myself. I know how to have empathy for another human being because I have human beings have empathy for me. You know, I have a saying that I run by. I love you. No, I like you because you're human, but I love you because of your defects. That's what makes us unique. Nobody in here is perfect. If anybody in here has an airtight recovery process, please raise your hand. You be the one I stay away from. Because we the kind of people, man, that we have situations that happen in life. Man creates a habit. Habit creates the man if the man allows it. Drug addiction. But that also carries in other areas in our life. It could be in relationships, jobs, clothing, whatever. And it gets to a point where it's just a habit-stricken thing. And that's what I love about the fourth step. I love the 10th step, the 11th step, and 12th step. Fourth step, we do an autobiography of our past. Nothing to be scared of. We already done did it. And if you don't like it, that means you change it. Fist up, you share with God and another human in yourself. God already knew. You knew. He just wants you to say it through your mouth to another person. Get some courage. 6 and 7s talk about, you know you got a character defect, right? Just don't make no damn shortcoming. And if you do, you ain't going to like the way you feel because you got a conscience. So, like, I'm well aware of the steps. And I can stand here and preach all this stuff to you, sound like real good, right? But the bottom line is, how the hell am I living when I walk out of here? And what I try to do, I don't wear no NA paraphernalia, right? And if I do, I carry it underneath, right? And I do it for a reason. I let my actions speak for itself. Real simple. I refuse to wear NA paraphernalia, walking down the street, getting in an argument, getting in a fight. Next thing you know, the man's cuffing me up. And he said, there's another recovering addict. Look how they're living. I want to be an example of the power what God has bestowed upon me to be the best person I can be. And if you don't believe in God, get off drugs. Because drugs has been nothing but a destructive force in my life. And I know that for a fact. Drugs has not been anything beneficial to me. All it did was make me a derelict. It made me hate you. It made me hate me. It made me hate society. It made me rebel. And made me do things that I didn't want to do to you and to me. So I don't do those things no more. Now, I'm just grateful for the God of my understanding to bestow the love that he bestowed in me. And like I hear people talk about God is good. You know, sex is good. A job is good. Bank account's good. Nice clothes is good. Nice car is good. My God is great. My God is great. Like, I ain't no rich guy. I'm a construction worker. I work hard for the buck. You know what I'm saying? I do what I got to do. But I'm more happy today than I have ever been in my life. I have a peace of mind. I know who I am. I can look in the mirror and look myself in the eye, give myself a kiss, give myself a hug, tell myself I love myself because I free myself from myself from what I used to be. And I am truly blessed. I am truly blessed. So if you're in this meeting, right, and you feel like you're not being loved, let me show you how much love there is in this room. Where everybody in here, go to the next person, give them a hug, and tell them you love them.
Love you.
That simple touch of another human being, right, is something that we've been crying for all the time we've been using. Just that care, that somebody cares enough to give you a hug and tell you that they love you. That's what we've been crying for. That simple touch, a warmth of another human being without any sexual connotation, just to grab you and hold you and say, I love you. It's going to be all right. And that's what the Rooms of Narcotics Anonymous is about. It's about helping the sick and suffering addict, newcomer, and old-timer. Old-timers need love, too. We got issues, too. All right? And just because we get a little time, we get a little quiet, but we know what to do. We don't drop it in the room. We drop it with our sponsor. You know, and I got a loving and caring sponsor. I love them to death. You know, I can't thank him enough because he doesn't sugarcoat nothing. He's like a straight shot of dope. A straight shot of coke, you know, a straight shot of liquor, no chaser. He give it to me straight the way I need it. And sometimes, yeah, I get angry with his ass, but I give him a kiss, give him a hug and say thank you. Because like all we are vessels. And God in his own divine way is going to use you to save somebody else's life through being an example of what you used to be. And what you're going to be through time if you do the work. So if you feel inadequate, it's only a feeling. Doesn't mean that you're inadequate. If you feel angry, find out why you're feeling angry. If you feel resentful, find out why you're feeling resentful. You know, I understand if you're angry at someone because they did something to you. But with that anger, you got to learn how to forgive. If you don't like the way somebody's living, you got to learn how to be tolerant. And when being tolerant, you got to learn how to love somebody in spite of. That's what God wants. I'm one of them cats. I see a cat walk in here, man. It could be greasy in a pork chop, greasy in a damn auto mechanic. First day here, I will give him a hug because that's all he needs. A kind word, soft touch, letting him know it's going to be all right. You're in the right place. Because that's exactly what I needed when I got here, even though I was a cat in the back. Don't touch me. That was fear of the unknown. So today I'm one of those people who, like, when I'm going through a situation, I don't F it and run. I face it and recover. And when I hear people talking about I'm in a dark room and I see this light, my thought always been is the train coming down the track ready to kill me. They say, no, that's the light at the end of the tunnel. So if you're in a dark moment in your life, that's God just building up some character within you. And I'm telling you from my own experience, like, I ain't no perfect ace. I have my flaws. You know, I do what I do sometimes. But what I try to do today is, like, I have my reference points. And I try to stay my reference points further and further apart. You know, this process is awesome. It is truly God-given. And if you ain't taking advantage of it, you are missing something fantastic. Because abstinence, it's cool in the beginning. But once you start doing the work, you will free yourself from yourself so you could be yourself. And you're going to like what you become. Some people ain't. But the bottom line, you ain't got to worry about them because you the one got to live with you. And if you could live with you and be comfortable with you, brush your shoulder off. Keep it moving. That's how I'm living. You know what I'm saying? Be proud of the uniform you're wearing because you can't change it. Be proud of the person you are. You can't change it in any way you can. I'm talking about you can't change your physical, who you are, but you could change your attitudes, your behaviors, your emotional outlook on life. Because I was a hater. Today I don't hate. I try to love. You know, well, I could tell you, if you're a newcomer, welcome. You in for the ride of your life. For real, real. First year, sit up front, learn to listen, listen to learn, learn the material, learn the language, get a sponsor, stay plugged in, stay connected. Know what I'm saying? Read the basic text. And in the basic text, get a Webster dictionary, because the things you think you know, you really don't know. My experience. I thought I was smart. I found out I ain't that smart at all. And with that, if nobody told you that they love you today, I love you, and my God loves you even more. And thank you all for letting me share.
And my second speaker, Gordon J.
Hey, everyone. My name is Gordon. I'm an addict.
Hey, Gordon.
We please reopen this meeting with a moment of silence followed by a serenity prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I like to always start out by saying that it's an honor, a privilege, and I consider it a blessing to speak at any Narcotics Anonymous meeting, function. Because a little over 14 years ago, we're in the same year, man, nobody wanted me to do nothing. And this is truly an honor. The topic is you can't heal what you can't feel. That's a tall order. And I was listening to Will, man, and it never ceases to amaze me the similarities of our stories. We may come from different backgrounds. We may have done different drugs. But the feeling and the pain and the desperation is the same. And you know, I kind of been like meditating on this topic, man, for a while. And I said, dang, God, I said, you're going to make me go down in there. I want to tell y'all some real clever stuff. But, you know, there's something about healing, man, that I didn't know nothing about until I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. There's something about feeling that I didn't know nothing about until I came into the rooms of Narcotics. Only thing I felt was dope. And I wanted to feel it more. And when I came in here, y'all told me, man, you trying to fill a void. A spiritual void. And I didn't understand none of that stuff. Newcomer, you are the most important person at any Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. Something real spiritual about that, man. And we'll hit on that. That's how I always took. I always wanted to receive. Self-centeredness was running my life. The fear, the self-centered fear was always running my life. My story too, man, is jails and institutions. My background is reform schools. Check this out. I'll bring you up to penitentiaries. C-8555, P-0910, P-1376, P-3505, P-6669. That's how I was identified. That's over the course of some years. So you talking about a cat that's standing here, man, that couldn't identify a feeling. Because I started using drugs at a very young age. I, too, man, I felt that sense of abandonment, even though I thought my mother abandoned me. But in reality, she was just going through her process. And I'm the oldest of four, and so I had to grow up real quick. And I'm not blaming nothing on my past or none of that stuff. It's just like Will said, it's a point of reference. It's something that I did not want to address, something I did not want to feel, something I did not want to deal with. And I was tailor-made for the drug. Tailor-made. And the drug came along, I said, okay. I ain't got to deal with none of it. I ain't got to deal with mom abandoning me. I ain't got to deal with my little brothers and sisters. Because I remember, man, at a very young age, I used to have to plait my sister's hair and send her to school, brush my brother's hair, and man, it was nothing but pain. All I knew was pain. Where's my mom? Where's she at? See, my mother and my father, just to give you a little background, my mother and father got divorced. And as a kid, I thought that some reason or another, that was my fault. And I would always try and bring them back together, but wasn't nothing happening. But as a young kid, I didn't have that concept. So they say some of us believe that we had this disease long before we picked up a chemical. Dis-ease, an uncomfortability, a certain unhealthiness, a certain feeling of just not being all there. So what happened was when my mother finally came around, man, and God bless her, I come in with resentments, blaming mom, blaming dad, that's why I'm an addict and all that old craziness, the blame throw, woof. Just blaming. Y'all told me, nah, man, man up, on your own, be responsible for your own behavior. Be responsible for your own feelings. See, but I didn't know how to do that, man. I'm a literature kind of guy, and if you read The Triangle of Self-Assessment, it talks about, man, some of us didn't mature emotionally. Some of us faltered along the way. I'm one of those some of us. I faltered along the way. I come in here at 44. I got 14 years, do the math. And man, emotionally, I was about, I'm going to give myself a break, about 18, probably 16. All right, get honest, huh? And so you can imagine where my head was at when I came in here. 44-year-old man with a 16-year-old emotional maturity. I'm talking about healing what I can't feel now. So as time went on, man, I met some cats who was just like me. We all had secrets. Nobody better not say nothing to us. You know how you get your little crew. And we all had those deep, dark secrets, man. That family stuff and all that stuff. So when, like I said, when the drug came along, man, we bit in. We bit in. So somewhere down the line, man, I lost my identity. I developed a nickname. Dish. What kind of shit is that? Huh? I walked around with all names. I walked around with that name for about 30 years. Then I came in here. My name is Dish and I'm an addict. The guy came and said, man, your name is Gordon, man. Where you get this? Where you get this Dish stuff from? I was still holding on. You know, because Gordon had to feel some stuff. Gordon had to heal some stuff, man. Some childhood stuff. I'm talking about molestation stuff. I'm talking about some deep-seated stuff, man, that I didn't want to deal with. They talk about healing is therapeutic. The therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel, man. That's healing. What Bill did when he said, man, everybody get up and just give somebody a hug, that's healing, man. I didn't get no hug either, man, when I was out there. I didn't get no hug at home. We didn't have to leave it to Beaver family where you sit around the table and say, well, how was your day? That wasn't my, ain't my story. That ain't my story. My story is, what you coming in here crying for? Going upstairs. Wash your face. Go on back outside and play. But deep down inside, I wanted to talk, man. They say that this disease cut us off from the sharing experience. I wanted to talk as a young man. But there was something inside of me, man. There was this thing. People would put so much shame and guilt on me. You know, like, dig this, man. Check this out. Newcomer. We got our shame and guilt, but a lot of it ain't ours. Own what's yours and dump the rest. Fourth step taught me that. A proper inventory taught me that. So what happened was, man, like, I started, man, God. Talking about feelings ain't all that easy. You know what I mean? I can talk about a whole bunch of surface stuff. But when it comes to getting down in there, man, talking about feeling the feelings of inadequacy and not measuring up, man, I don't want to talk about it. I want to present this fasana that everything's cool. Will said it. Thanks for setting up the stage, man. He said it. There's something about me that's shaky and insecure, man. I'm talking about present stuff. I ain't talking about yesteryears. There's something inside of me that's so shaky and insecure, man, that drives me nuts. In our literature, it says, man, at some point of time, I'm just paraphrasing. I used to quote it like all outdoors. Now I done got kind of old. But it says something to the effect, man, that at some point in time, we learn how to identify with what we feel. Why is that? Because feelings is what drives us to what we do. I start thinking, I get this thought, boom. And the next thing I know, I start feeling some stuff. And the next thing I know, I'm off to the races. Somebody say, man, well, can you change how you feel? Yeah, change how you think. precedes the action. So where's all the, you know, we say, well, feelings ain't fact, but they reality. I don't care what y'all talking about. That sound clever. Feelings ain't fact. Yeah. Yeah, tell my feelings that. Shit. Say, I'll bring you up to date, man. I'll bring you up to date. I like to talk about the here and now because that's where we recover at. Right? That's what our literature says. We recover in the here and now. Right? What was a practical or applicable in the past phase of recovery may not be applicable in this phase. So that means that recovery is about change. It's always changing. This is a spiritual thing. This is a spirit, and that's a movement. Right? And check this out, man. About a week ago, Monday, all kinds of stuff been happening, right? My fiance, I used to call her my woman. I don't do that no more, right? My fiance, we got her a car, right? And it's a two-car family. God damn. But anyway, I just thought about that. But anyway, her engine goes. Boom. $400. You know, the warranty was about, the warranty gave us the engine, but we had to put $400 to put it in. All right, I got that. Next thing I know, she got to get a inspection, exhaust system, brakes, that of the $300. All right, we're getting up in there now, $700. Huh? Like, damn. Now, as much as I would like to present this persona that I'm cool, I got it going on, money don't bother me, God provides. Man, check this out. So, all right, we're going to do this. I'm driving it one day, and it just stops. Boom. I said, what the hell? The transmission then fell out. Now we're talking money. I tell her, trade it in, damn it, that no more money. Feelings are starting to happen. Right? Feelings are starting to go on, right? I ain't paying no more money later for this. Da 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 da. Right. So check this out. We finally get that hooked up. So that's about $1,200 in a 1994 Buick. I don't know what kind of sense that makes right now, right? But check this out. Stay with me. Now, dig this. Newcomer and all of us, dig this. Be on guard for the unguarded moment because it's coming. It's coming. That's why we come to meetings, man, so we can militate against that unguarded moment. You got to hear stuff. You got to keep hearing over the same old stuff. But boy, I'm telling you, when you get in that dark moment that Will was talking about, that's when these meetings going to come in. It's like putting money in the bank, right? Check this out. So I have this dream about my mom, right? Man, I ain't dreamt about her in a long time. She died in 92, and I thank the fellowship for helping me through that. I didn't use, man, right? And it was like an N.A. funeral. They didn't even know her. Everybody did, right? Anyway, but dig this, man. Now, stay with me. I'm talking about some feelings. I'm driving to work, and by the time I get to the job, man, the thought of Taylor's Dark Port. That's the cheapest wine on the market. That's what I drank. I wasn't no Cossier. I can't even pronounce the damn word. Right? Yeah, so you know I wasn't one of them guys, right? Cossier, all right. See, I knew we got some clever guys. Anyway, man, like, and my mouth was salivating, man. I'm talking about 14 years clean. Newcomer, it's not abnormal to think and want to use. That's what we do. The abnormal thing is not to use. For us. So I'm sitting there, man, and I'm like, where is this coming from? Will, I just love this cat, man. I just met him. He set it up, man, the halt. I was a little angry about all this money. And then when my mom come into this dream, man, I had this sense of dread and impending doom and this sense of loneliness, man, and this sense of emptiness. I'm talking about a spiritual void, man, that nothing can fill. Ain't nothing wrong with money. But when you start making money your God, it becomes a problem. Ain't nothing wrong with a relationship. But when you start making that relationship your God, you've been making a problem. And man, I'm sitting at the at my desk. I got a desk. And I'm sitting. This stuff never ceases to amaze me, man. And I'm sitting there and something said, red light, red light, red light. You're in trouble. You're in trouble. Call your sponsor. I called him. I said, Sponsor. I'm stuttering because I don't want to tell him I'm thinking about a dark port. Ego. Image. Pride. So he said, what's wrong, man? He know me. I said, man, I had a dream about my mom, man, and blah, blah, blah. He said, man, I know that one. He said, you know my niece just died. He said, you know my mother died. He said, you know my sister died. He said, I feel the same stuff, man. He said, ain't it a bitch to feel human again? It was like a light bulb went off. I said, oh, human. Damn. They say in our literature, some of us had to go to the animalistic level. That was my level. I didn't know how to feel human. I didn't know nothing about love. We were talking about compassion, concern. No, me, 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 me. And while we're here at the last paragraph, it says it's a gift to feel human. I believe that spirituality, man, is about a proper human, human connection with each other. A loving and caring connection. I believe that it's a proper connection with the God of our understanding. I believe that it's a proper connection with the true self. Excuse me. When I become in harmony with self, all is cool. But when I allow stuff outside of me, man, to start dictating and controlling, I catch some feelings, Jack. And they all come from past experiences. Steps teach you that. You can go as deep as you want to go in this thing. And for me, I had to go. I don't do no surfing, man. I go under the water. And that don't make me no spiritual giant or no guru or none of that, man. I just know where I come from. I know, man, now that in order to heal, I need to learn how to feel. And I'm not talking about F-I-L-L. Because I always feel that void. I can always do that. I'm talking about F-E-E-L. I'm talking about sitting down, man, even when you're in a relationship and you're feeling lonely. Where is that coming from? You can be laying up with your loved one, man, and feel like you by your goddamn self. Where is that coming from? Huh? And you in love now. I got to put that in there. It don't mean that you don't care. And what I found out, man, we got a seven step. Man, when that loneliness and that emptiness comes about, man, only God can fill it. Only the spiritual principle can feel that. Only God. And I'm here to tell you, man, once you learn how to experience that, to go through that feeling, allow God to fill that hole, allow God to fill that void, you're on your way. But it don't always happen just because you know it. It just don't happen. My experience is it don't happen just because I know it. It's just like using. I had to practice to use. Got to practice this stuff, man. My sponsor gave me something, man, Earl, when I was first on my fourth step, because I done did a few. And I was telling about the molestation issues when I was young. You know, I had this female babysitter, and she was taking advantage of me, right? And I always kind of hid that. I didn't want to deal with that. You know what I mean? And I told my sponsor about it. He said, man, you got to learn how to start healing. You got to learn how to start forgiving that person, right? And he said, man, check this out. When you're in the shower, come out the shower, look in the mirror, hug yourself, and say, man, I love you. That was the damnedest suggestion I ever heard in my life. But I started doing it. And sometimes, man, in a meeting, like even when Will was sharing, I started nurturing myself. Because he was hitting some stuff. So I've learned how to nurture myself because I never did before. I'm learning how to take care of my emotional self. He said, man, get a picture. If you got a baby picture of yourself, man, look at that baby picture and tell that little boy, man, y'all all right. And I did that, man. I got to remember that stuff. So you can't heal what you can't feel. But you can't heal if you won't allow yourself to feel. You just can't, man. Oh, shit. I don't even remember what I said. God's in effect, I'm here to tell you. God and God, thank you. God's in effect. You can't heal what you can't feel, but you can't heal what you won't allow yourself to feel. You have to give yourself permission to be human. You have to give yourself permission, man, to feel that loneliness, man. It ain't going to kill you. Because I believe this, and this is just my take, and this is from the people that's in my life, that void is a human thing because God wants to fill it for you. I got some people in my life. We don't jaw jack. We trying to recover. Of course, we some of the craziest people in the world, but hey. And I appreciate these guys. I appreciate them. And I appreciate Narcotics Anonymous, man. I appreciate this fellowship, right? I'm going to give you a little scenario, and I'm going to get out of here. They say that in the second step, they say that, you know, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, right? And through my investigation and through my studies and through my prayer work and my step work, I saw that that was a three-part step. Right? And you'll hear some guys will say, well, they don't even mention God in that step. I said, well, why don't you read the whole step? It says that we can call this power the program. We can call it the group. Or we can call it God. So that tells me, man, that I need all three. All that stuff about, well, the program's one thing and the fellowship's another. Get shut up! You can't have one without the other. You can't have one without the other. Check this out. If I was the only one in this program, be talking to myself. So, in that aspect, man, a lot of times I can't get to God when I'm feeling that sense of loneliness. I got to call my sponsor so God can speak through my sponsor. I got to call one of you guys because they say the ultimate weapon is what? Another recovering addict. And the most powerful vehicle for recovery is the group. It's some powerful stuff here, man. Don't pass over this with a minimum of concern. Start allowing yourself to feel so you can heal. And a lot of that is through the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. Thanks for letting me share.